A thorn between two thorns. But a fine thorn. Okay. Yesterday we did two stories. Two stories yesterday. And When God Was Flesh and Wild was one, and the other one we did was Little Sparrows See God Fall, which is a retelling of the last days in Jerusalem of Jesus and the presence of the earth, so the goings on of those last days. This morning we're going to retell a little section from the book of Daniel, the prophet Daniel. And that was a book written perhaps 200 years, 150 years before Christ. And it was a book of resistance. It was a telling of the, presumably around the figure of Daniel, the kind of stories that enabled people to live among a destructive and violent time. And the central figure, Daniel, was one of the young people, as it was in those days, and has happened ever since, of taking Daniel and other Jewish children, in this case, into the king's court to teach them the language and literature of the king, so that they could become educated into the new reality of bigger and more of the empire. And Daniel, he learned the language, but he refused to eat the food. He lived on cabbages and simple fare. And so that was one of the forms of resistance of what he chose to take into his body and eat, which is one of the common forms of resisting in modest ways. We just sang Beautiful Gaia, and we sang All the Critters. I suppose one of the other ways of talking about what we're up to in these days, as we identify the destructiveness in our ways of being towards the earth, is to put it simply, we have been busy in murdering God's choir, killing off the choirs of God. It's another way of saying what we've been up to. And it's easily been identified, the decline of some 40% of the bird life in the last 50 years. The songbirds, the decline in songbirds, the decline in insects, which is a byproduct, or the decline of insects is also affecting radically the bird population. So, and the other animals and creatures that suffer, and the wetlands and the earth in its different forms. So you might say within our community, another way of speaking about this is we have been killing the choirs of God. And this story is a somewhat whimsical retelling. It was written about 8 years ago, so do not think that it was written out of very recent events, but it's the nature of these things that they repeat. Archetypal characters and myth repeat. And so this character may seem quite familiar to you in the story of the king of bigger and more, but it's from over 2,000 years ago, and this story, retelling, is about 8 years old. So we shall begin with this little story. It's about 20 minutes. And I would suggest, think of this as radio. You're not going to see anything up here. Just feel free to close your eyes and let your own images come. Remember, you used to lie by the radio and listen to the stories? Well, this is radio. We offer you our voices, and that's all. And the image work will be yours. So we are not going to have a flow of images. That's your task. That's your task. 3 months before... No, that's not the one. That was what it was open to, but that's not the... That's yesterday's. Not far from here, there once lived a famous king. His name was Nebuchadnezzar. A big name for the king of a really big empire. King Nebuchadnezzar lived in a palace of cedar wood, silver and gold. It had a roof garden of rare flowers and trees from Ethiopia to Mongolia. There were peacocks, apes, a tiger in a cage. The king would look down over his great city with its tall buildings of business, arenas, cathedral malls. His chest would swell. As he looked beyond the city to where once there had been only green forests, but now there was his forest of gray factory chimneys, high as heaven, puffing yellow smoke.
"That smoke,"
said the king,
"is the color of gold."
Yes,
the color of gold, repeated the king's advisors, who always stood behind the king. The land that spread out before him was King Nebuchadnezzar's pie, and wherever he stuck in his thumb, he would pull out a plum and say,
"Oh, what a good king am I."
"Yes, a good king, echoed the advisors. Every night, in the palace banquet hall, there were 200 guests. Always seated next to the king were generals and colonels in uniforms with ribbons and medals. There were men in silk suits, women in satin gowns. None of the growing poor, no satirical court clown. The king's 1,000 wives would serve the guests. The menu included favorites of hummingbird eggs, scrambled nose of lamb, roasted dolphin, butterfly wings coated in icing sugar, bran muffins with walnut shells for roughage. After the meal, everyone would pick their teeth with toothpicks cut from the tips of the tallest trees. Every night, as the dinner ended, all would raise their glasses to your Royal Highness, Potentate of Parliament, Mullah of the Markets, and all would sing his lullaby. "Sleep well, O King of everything, King of bigger and more. We the bell and you the ring-a-ding, ding, ding, ding." Lullaby in his ears. The king would slip into his feather bed and a peaceful sleep. Until 3 nights ago. 3 nights ago. For it was then King Nebuchadnezzar first had his bad dream. And each night after, now he was afraid to go to bed. The words, "God is at work when tyrants have bad dreams," kept creeping into his head.
"I am no tyrant. I am good news to the nation. Do not my advisors say so?"
Protested the king to his trembling hands.
"But, oh, this nightmare needs explaining. Send for the cleverest of the empire."
In 4 days' time, all were gathered, all the clever ones in the royal council hall. The brightest and best were there, also one uninvited stranger who had been asked, "Who are you?" might have said that she was a grower of cabbages and a kind of poet named Danielle. But nobody asked. As this stranger stood at the back of the great chamber behind a candle stand with no candle.
"I shall tell you of my nightmare, my alarming dream, and you, the smartest and shiniest spoons in the royal drawer, will tell me what it means. Night after night, I dream of a beautiful green tree. Its great branches reach beyond seeing in every direction, north, south, east, west, high as heaven. Under this tree are humans and creatures of every kind, and they are all smiling. There are the sounds of playing, working, singing. Then suddenly, there are no sounds at all, only an empty and frightening silence. Where there was once a tree, there is only a stump wrapped in an iron band, a prisoner's shackle. Seeing that, I awake, covered in sweat and trembling. Now tell me, what is the meaning of my dream?
The king sat on the edge of his throne and waited and waited until, angry at their silence, he demanded,
"Well?"
Finally, everyone stood, bowed, spoke in one voice. We do not know what your dream means, O king of bigger and more, but we do know that it is nothing to be troubled about, for all is perfect in the land, and it's getting better and better every day." Then they all sat down. Then, after a few minutes, the uninvited Danielle stepped up from the shadows. The grower of cabbages, a kind of poet, slowly walked down the aisle, past the bodyguards, until she stopped in front of the king's throne. No one moved a muscle. Then Daniel charged at King Nebuchadnezzar, threw his arms around the king's neck as if the king were a drowning man. Then Daniel whispered loudly into the royal ear,
"You are a tree. Your power, like branches, reaches from one end of the empire to the other. If you show respect and compassion, are compassionate justice to the weakest and poorest of these creatures, hummingbirds, dolphins, forests, bees, rivers, sparrows, humans, and other animals of every kind and kin, you will stand tall like a great tree. In trees crown and around, happy lives and well-being will abound. But if you and your little circle continue your greedy ways, eating up the earth, waters and creatures, taking mountains more than you need, you, tree, shall be cut down in shame. So decide. Will you continue to be good news to the greedy and bad news to the needy, or the other way around?"
Danielle let go of the king, gave the king two motherly slaps to the head, and turned to the door. But quick as a coyote, Danielle turned back, giving the king one more slap before walking out of the grand hall. Everyone stood with mouths open. King Nebuchadnezzar gave himself a shake and shouted,
"Out! Out! Everyone out! Go, so I may think about what has been said."
As the sun was setting, the king finally arose and made his way slowly up the marble staircase, reaching the grand roof garden. He took one step out, saying,
"I shall be a good king, a tall tree standing."
Two steps out.
"A good king, a tall tree standing."
Three steps out to where he could see the lights of his great city, whose smoke was like gold. The king declared,
"Already I am a good king, a king of goods. That is why those around me sing,
Sleep well, O king of everything.
King of bigger and more, we the bell and you the ring-a-ding-ding-ding-ding." I love that song. So I say, I, King Nebuchadnezzar, am the tallest of trees standing.
At that very moment, declaring himself to be the greatest tree, as if slipping on a banana peel, His Highness lost his balance, stumbled to the left, staggered to the right, and then toppled off the roof and fell like a tree chopped down. Down, down he fell. But just before he hit the bricks of the palace steps, 100 ravens, doves, sparrows set their claws into his breeches, into his bottom, and flew up, up, and away with the terrified king. All through the night, all through the next day, and into the holy dark of the next night, flew the 100 birds with their cargo. Finally, they dropped Nebuchadnezzar onto a grassy riverbank in the heart of a forest.
Wolf!
Is the sound kings make when they hit the ground. Lying there on his back, King Nebuchadnezzar looked up at the stars. He saw the moonshine shining on treetops, a tree trunk, and a huge wolf. Wolf looked down at him and growled, thinking Wolf must have said, "Sir." The king murmured with as much bluster as he could manage.
I'm your king, Nebuchadnezzar, king of bigger and more.
Repeated Wolf.
You are the king of bigger and more tears.
You, snarled the surrounding forest, are a king of hurting and harming. You, chirped the sparrows, are a berserker among berry bushes.
Let's poke him in the eyes,
hissed the hummingbird. Let's bite him, quacked the ducks, who had seen many rivers the king and his great projects had turned from sweet to sick.
Let's whack him, whack him,
said the fish with big tails. Let's lick him, croaked the frogs, all over.
You frogs are disgusting.
There's nothing to discuss. Lick 'em, frogs replied.
Wait, insisted the river turtle, who was older than Moses. The situation is urgent. We must go slowly. Let's leave this arrogant king to sit here alone in stillness until he knows that he is not God. Perhaps his eyes will see. Perhaps his ears will learn to hear.
Perhaps his nose will run, and his bum will trot,
growled Wolf.
Perhaps, said Turtle. But maybe his hard heart will soften. His heart of stone will, against all odds, become a heart of flesh. Is not the God of heavens and earth a God who softens and stretches hearts?
Cruel stretcher of hearts,
smiled Wolf, as a deer calf now rested in the shelter of his shoulder.
Let us leave him a while, said Turtle, to the agreement of all. Even the grass and trees turned themselves away from the king. Stop! Do not leave me,
pleaded the king as they all left and loneliness arrived. Confused, Nebuchadnezzar flopped down onto the grass by the river's edge and began to cry. He cried as the loneliness swept over him. Was it because he was afraid to be in a world not of his own making or his managing? Nor to his understanding that the king wept. He sobbed and sobbed, the king of bigger and more, the majesty of the markets. He only stopped crying long enough to lick the dew off the grass so that he had water enough to make more tears. After weeping all night and all the next day and the next, the king had cried out some of his loneliness, some of his fear, some of his arrogance. And now, as his tears flowed, his fisted heart began to open a little, and his eyes opened a little. His face, leaning over the riverbank, ran with tears, a little river of tears, which streamed into the water. And suddenly, little fishes swam up those tears, up into his eyes, into his head. The fish swam around in there with luminous bugs, a frog, an otter, and the king began to think new thoughts.
The flowing brightness of these lovely ones, it is more beautiful than gold.
Quick as a minnow's flash, a song sparrow flew into the king's ear. Two, three, four singing song sparrows flew into his head and down into his heart. And with them they brought the morning air and the sky that wraps the earth.
This airy music is much lovelier than a lullaby at bedtime.
Hearing all the music, the king was unable not to dance. He danced on the shore. He danced down until he became dizzy and fell into the river. Then he danced under the water. As he sank down, the king reached out to a tree's root. But the tree grabbed him, took hold with its powerful water-sucking roots. It sucked the king right into itself. He found himself in another river, the river which runs under the bark of every tree. Up, up, he was sucked and drawn until he was pulled into a large branch, into a stem, into a leaf, then tossed from the leafy fountain that is every tree's crown. Tossed was the king into the catching air until he was caught no longer. Down dropped the king, bouncing from one branch to another and another, sliding down the last green hill onto a big bed of green moss with tiny red flowers.
That was beautiful. Beautiful,
sighed the king in a kind of prayer. Assaulted by beauty, the king's defenses were overwhelmed, and again he began to weep. For two more days and nights he cried from regions of his heart whose geography he had never visited. As quickly as he was given a sense of beauty and goodness of the singing air and the living waters, he was given tears of remorse, of regret, tears for his share in the destruction of the forests, tears for his part in the poisoning of rivers and oceans. And it was at that moment he began to hear others crying. He heard sad singing in the air, sad songs in the water, the sorrowful sounds of the trees of the earth, the stumps.
Why must I hear these crying tears?
Wondered the king.
Tears, piped Turtle, who along with the others was never very far away. Tears are for you to swim in for a little while. Some things can only be discovered through tears. The tears of others, no less than our own. Tears have their own wisdom, and tears, like rivers, not only separate, but can join you together. Are they not joining you to your kin, whom you have forgotten? Yes, tears are joining me to my kin, and to their sadness.
Realized the king. Immediately there then came an invasion of laughter. King Nebuchadnezzar began to laugh, now with a new laugh, and it sounded like water. Water tumbling over river stones, growing into the sound of a waterfall. The king laughed his new laugh for as long as he had cried. For 3 days and nights he laughed. He only stopped long enough to drink fresh water from rivers so that he could laugh some more. To get rivers' water, King Nebuchadnezzar knelt on the shore, held out his cupped hands in the form of a begging bowl. On the first day of laughter, because laughter, like misery, loves company, he tried nestling in with Bear. But Bear was not yet ready to trust the king. However, the crows, with growing confidence that the king's heart was turning in a new direction, had already decided on a new name, Little Neb. On the second day of laughter, some of the other creatures grew forgiving. And in that universal gesture of friendship, mending among frogs, ducks, humans, and others, they all warmed their wet, cold feet on the king's belly. On the third day of laughter, river, forest, animals had a heated debate.
Be it resolved that the king is now ready to attend a parliament of the creatures.
The debate hinged on whether Neb had been sufficiently debauched by the divine comedy.
Has he been given the holy laughter that corrupts the purity of arrogance?
Asked the red willows on the river bank.
Has he laughed long enough for the belly laughter of delighted to pervert the course of his ingratitude?
Asked Moose, who had a nose like a bun. The debate ended with Turtle's question.
Do not most of us believe that the king now has within him the laughter of the bowl that gently holds what is within? And do we not hope that in time he shall have the laughter of the knife that wisely cuts?
Nearly all nodded agreement to the river's motion.
Be it resolved and enacted that the king be invited to join in the parliament of the creatures.
And so the king joined the others on the shoreline of the river, where the citizens of water, earth, trees, and fiery air meet. For many days they brooded together over matters great and small. The king listened, and only on the last day did the king speak.
Until these recent days, like many others, I have been one who hears better with his rear than with his ears. I shall now be a king of big ears. I shall continue to listen and learn from all you good citizens. No longer shall I seek the applause of the rich and powerful. Let my joy be the mountains and hills bursting into songs, and the trees clapping their hands. For then, all the children yet to come shall surely be fat with milk and glad with honey.
May it be so,
said the hummingbirds and everyone else. There, said Raven, perhaps King Neb is now ready to return.
Perhaps,
said the trees, turtle, and river, as 100 sparrows, doves, and ravens landed on the king's bottom and carried him back to the roof of his palace. Some say that when King Nebuchadnezzar returned, he became a good king for all the creatures of the waters and the earth. Before long, the people who wanted more and more sensed that there was something new, great changes in the land. The storyteller Daniel says that Nebuchadnezzar remained a good king until he died. The poet Isaiah says that he didn't. Some storytellers say that King Nebuchadnezzar is still very much alive, living in his palace with a roof garden and hasn't even fallen off the roof yet. Thank you. How much? Do we have a couple of minutes? Let's see. Okay. So we'll just take a couple of minutes if folks want to identify something that was pleasing or troubling or a question. Puzzle. There's no right answer to this, of course. What, Jean? Cathedral Grove. Mm-hmm.
I love the trees; they're so beautiful. Mm-hmm.
So Cathedral Grove is one of those places where the wonder of the treed earth is you experience, and to be able to press against the eight or 900 years or 1,000, I don't know, is it, how old are the, certainly 800 or 900, I think, isn't that true? So the loss of the trees is one thing that's striking, and in the volume of loss, yes. Anything else that just kind of comes to? The pollution of our oceans is something that strikes you. Yeah, and we all are certainly familiar with different things that really register with us. I'm sure. Okay, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're struck by the amount of stuff and waste that we. Did the king in any way seem familiar? But of course, you know, like I say, that was a story from 2,000 years ago, and it's teased out a little, but the outline is there. And this was written 8 years ago, but there were earlier versions. But and it's easy to see that out there. But if we stop for a minute and imagine ourselves as the king, if I am the king, if you are the king, what does it take to turn us in new directions becomes a question. And different things, no doubt, for each of us, to register the utter beauty of the earth and the need to care for its well-being. Sorry? Mm-hmm. Yeah. To share something of ourselves rather than stuff. Yes. And there are many responses to be made. You know, there's no... not presuming to discern what's appropriate in each region, and the tasks are many and varied, and you know them. But the idea, I think, is not to forget that in our inheritance, our faith inheritance, in our biblical inheritance, we have many companions who, from the earliest times, from the creation of the earth, when God says, as the story goes, all is good. This is good. And our task is to have dominion as a lover has dominion with the well-being of the earth. And so we are reminded again and again of this. And it's the function of the stories is simply to retrieve that memory, which is there for us to draw on and find companionship in. We are part of a great parade, and it goes back, and we perhaps have lost the eyes to see the attention to all the earth which is in Scripture. We have eyes for the human struggle and the human adventure and the pushes and pulls in our own human hearts, but the eyes to see the rest of creation is one that our Western inheritance in reading the Bible has blocked out, and it's in fact there, so it invites a rereading, and a rethinking of many of the Scripture stories that situate us in the immediacy of the gift of our sisters and brothers. The Isaiah identifies the great problem, and when the people are complaining, where's God? We can't see the face of God. And Isaiah says, I turn away my face because you have turned away from your kin. That's the great sin, to turn away from all our relations. And that carries over to other familiar ground, doesn't it? The Truth and Reconciliation Commission. But the there in Isaiah, there's this thread that we experience God is hiding God's face because we turn away from our kin, where we can encounter the holy in the everyday, in the trees of the forest, the trees outside the river, as well as our neighbors with their experience and their beauty and confusion and trouble like we have and bring. So it's good to be with you neighbors here today, and I thank you for having a place for me in sharing in your worship, and I thank you.